I didn't hear about it till Sunday that Senator Marty wanted to postpone this meeting, but we had notified just about everybody involved, and I found out of it late Sunday night, last night, and I just thought it was kind of too late in the game to not fulfill the promise that I made to the authors of the bill, and that was about 2 weeks ago. I said we're not going to be moving this. This is my call, I guess, this body until the House got the bill to the floor. Well, they got it to the floor last Thursday or something, so I did what I told everybody I'd do, and that is to hold a hearing. So then we scheduled a hearing for today. Senator Marty called, and he called again this morning. He can't make it with his testifiers, and I said, well, I thought you guys all kind of knew the rules, but so I think we're, in fairness to the author, we're just going to, and he's not ready. He's got some experts, I guess, from California or somewhere coming in, and they're not here. So it's my intention is not to take any votes today, but we will hear from the opponents, and then as soon as Senator Marty can get his people together, we'll do that the next day or two, and fairness to him. But I did everything I told him and the that I would do, and that is to hold a hearing once we saw that it was moving somewhere else. Well, it's moving. So that's where we're at today. Again, I didn't feel like I should call this important issue. And so we won't vote today. But and by the way, we have to be on the floor at 11. I have to be at a pre-floor session meeting at about 10 to 11, so we're only going to go about 30, 40 minutes. So those are kind of the ground rules, and apparently we're just going to hear this morning from the opponents. I thought there would be more people on the other side, even a person or two from California, but I guess. So any questions on the procedure here? I think we'll get it started, and that's what I know, and we're just trying to be as fair to everybody as we can. And
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Michelle.
Thank you for your the update. I just want to note, I don't think all the members are here just yet, but I know the members on our side of the aisle were rearranging their schedules, and one had a funeral she wanted to attend, and we all planned to be here at 10 this morning.
I guess I told you, Senator Michelle, it's a fair question. I tried to answer it by saying I called this meeting last Thursday or last Wednesday, so it's not like it wasn't a day later it was going to be held. It's going to be held 4 or 5 days later, which is today. Now, you're the author of the bill. I think you'd get your folks in, but I'm not going to question. So that's the background. I'm fulfilling the promise I made to those people, and they did have a 4 or 5 day notice, and hopefully there's nothing else going on here that maybe I'm not aware of or something, and you can read into that what you'd like. But so with that, I think, yeah, and I'm sorry. I guess I'm apologizing too, but why am I apologizing? But no, and
your committee's here and ready to work.
Yeah, that's right. And so I think with that, like I say, unfortunately, we only have about a half an hour this morning, but that's why we're here, and I'm fulfilling my end of the agreement. We'll hear first from Mr. Eric Hyland, Alliance of Automotive Manufacturers. And again, if we run out of time, that's the way it's going to be, and then we'll just have to come back. But if you can be kind of brief, everybody, I'd appreciate that if possible.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Hyland, welcome to the
thank
committee.
You, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Eric Hyland, and I'm with Meserly and Kramer. This morning I'm representing the Alliance of Automotive Manufacturers. The Alliance is a trade association of 10 car and light truck manufacturers, including BMW, Chrysler, Ford, General Motors, Mazda, Mercedes-Benz, Mitsubishi Motors, Porsche, Toyota, and Volkswagen. With me today is Ms. Laura Dooley from the Alliance of Automotive Manufacturers. Before I turn it over, and usually I'm responding to proponents' testimony, but I'm going to have to interject this little piece of information. Proponents of this legislation suggest that the federal government does not regulate CO2 emissions. And I want to make the point that, in fact, fuel economy and CO2 emissions are inextricably linked. 98% of greenhouse gas emissions come from the operation, the combustion of the fuel. There's very, very little greenhouse gas emissions from an automobile that does not come from the consumption of fuel. So obviously, there's no real significant way to reduce CO2 without, in fact, reducing or increasing the miles per gallon. And that's the point that I really wanted to make and stress right out of the way, right out of the gate. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Dooley, and she can walk you through the significant events that have occurred on a federal level and why we just don't think this is the right move for Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Dooley, and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Tom Sonny.
Mr. Chairman, Ms. Dooley, I don't know if you want to do this or not, but since the author is not here, could you kind of tell us what the bill would do if it were to pass and then tell us why we shouldn't do it?
Sure.
That's not a bad
deal. Between the two of us, I think we can do that.
Well, Tavassoni's pretty sharp for so early as a Monday morning.
So I'm assuming she doesn't want it to pass. But.
Great. So, okay. Mr. Chairman,
do you want to explain Senator Marty's bill for him?
Sure. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Laura Dooley. Thank you very much for having us here today to speak on against this bill. Just to start, I cut this out of my testimony to save time, but I'll put it back in quickly. What this bill would do, essentially, is implement the California Low Emission Vehicle Program in the state of Minnesota. States have two options when it comes to air quality or regulatory control over their emissions programs. They can follow either the federal government's program that's been in place now for a long time, or they can follow the California program, which was designed in, I believe, in the 60s and has kind of come to be as your second option. There's no in-between with these two programs. You either go with the federal program or you go with the California program. And states like Minnesota, in doing so, would be tying all future regulatory changes that the California program makes to the state of Minnesota. So in that sense, you would just essentially be, well, what we would say, ceding your authority to the state of California when it comes to air quality matters. There's three main components to the program. The first component is a tailpipe or smog-forming emissions component, and that's called the LEV, or Low Emission Vehicle 2 program. Again, it controls things like PM, particulate matter, NOxes, volatile organic compounds, or the pollutants that come out of your tailpipe. There is what is called the Zero Emission Vehicle Mandate, which is a fuel cell or battery electrical vehicle mandate, but Senator Marty's bill does not require Minnesota to adopt that program. That's the one aspect that's actually severable. We don't contest that by any means. The third part of the program, which is largely the reason we believe that it was introduced, is a fuel economy portion of the program, which would regulate greenhouse gases, to a certain extent air conditioning emissions, like Eric said. But again, that program, which is designed to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, is a fuel economy mandate from the state of California. And that all being said, that is the program that's in front of you today, and we as the industry oppose the implementation of the California program. We believe that the federal program is a better is just a better place for Minnesota to stay for a variety of reasons. Just let me start off by saying we absolutely share the goals of what we're trying to do here today. Preserve a clean environment, attain energy independence, and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. You know, the automobile industry has taken the lead in doing such things. We bring clean, innovative, and advanced technologies to the market all the time. Today, consumers have over 62 different models of alternative fuel vehicles available for their purchase. With nearly 12 million of these vehicles on the road, Minnesota already has 200,000 of them. And because of this commitment, the Alliance of Automobile Manufacturers supported the Energy Independence and Security Act of 2007, which is also known as H.R. 6. The centerpiece of H.R. 6 is a requirement that automakers achieve an unprecedented minimum 40% increase in corporate average fuel economy standards, or CAFE standards, by 2020. And this will result in a minimum 30% reduction in CO2 emissions. I just want you to note the word minimum in there. H.R. 6 requires the National Highway Traffic and Safety Association at the federal level to push these standards even further if they determine the technologies available. 2 weeks ago, the Department of Transportation, through its agency, NHTSA, released its notice of proposed rulemaking in relation to H.R. 6, a summary of which we're handing out to you right now. This single national standard is shaping up to be right on par and even more aggressive than the California program. albeit it still provides the flexibility manufacturers need to put the vehicle fleets onto the roads today. If you just take a quick look through the program, I'll try to explain it to you quickly. The national program now standards have been promulgated through 2015, starting in model year 2011. So what we have today is a fair comparison of what California requires through 2015 and what the federal program requires to 2015. Before 2 weeks ago, this comparison wasn't possible because we didn't know what the federal standards were going to look like. And if you do a side-by-side comparison, these two numbers incorporate an entire fleet average. So we're talking about passenger cars and light trucks and SUVs. By 2013, the federal program is slightly higher than California and continues to be slightly higher through 2015. After 2015, NHTSA is going to undergo a new rulemaking to show us what the future fuel economy standards will be, and at that time, we'll be able to compare further. But until now, we stop at the 2015 mark. And quickly, if you look on the back, just to reiterate, the numbers that I'm using, the California numbers come straight from the California Air Resources Board, which is the regulatory body that governs California's program, and the federal numbers come from the notice of proposed rulemaking that was released 2 weeks ago. But if you look at the CO2 emissions reductions in the year 2015 for the federal government, it's at 521 million metric tons of carbon dioxide. In 2016, the California program is at 434 million metric tons, which is slightly less. Now, just to emphasize the fact that California is less, this number assumes that the California program has been implemented in 50 states, which is not the case. Currently, it's been adopted in 12 states, but has yet to be implemented anywhere because the U.S. EPA denied California the necessary waiver to implement their fuel economy program. That issue is obviously being appealed, I'm sure you've heard, by several states across the country. But at this point in time, California's fuel economy program cannot be implemented in California or in Minnesota, regardless of whether this bill is passed. And that's a decision that will need to come down from the federal level or through litigation. Quickly, and that's just a quick overview of the comparison between the two programs. But there are several other concerns that automobile manufacturers have with the California program, and I just want to walk you through them very quickly. Number one, adoption of the California program will not support Minnesota's commitment to E85 technology, fuel, or infrastructure. The California program constrains the sale of E85 vehicles. In today's market, there are 22 different models of flex fuel vehicles available to consumers. In California, only 13 of those models are available to the states. Product restrictions under CalEV are likely to get even worse, particularly if the California Air Resources Board continues down their intended path of modifying their emissions portion of the regulation and requiring the average vehicle to meet what they call the SULEV, or Super Ultra-Low Emission Vehicle Standard. To date, no flex fuel vehicle has ever certified to the SULEV standard, and California's intention is to make that the average vehicle on the road. In addition, should the fuel economy standards in California ever be implemented, there is no practical way for manufacturers to get credit for flex fuel vehicles, producing them or selling them through the California program. The question is why, I'm sure. Manufacturers only get credit for E85 vehicles if they can prove that consumers are using flex E85 fuel in those vehicles over a certain miles traveled. So it requires the tracking of fuel use in the vehicles in order to attain credit. An expert retained by California to testify on the issue of renewable fuels and various pieces of litigation across the country stated under oath that it would not be prudent for vehicle manufacturers to rely on the sale of E85 vehicles to generate sufficient credits to comply with the fuel economy standards proposed in the California program. Secondly, the California program will result in even further product restrictions. It's a simple question to ask why automakers believe HR6 is better than the California's proposed fuel economy standards, and the answer is simple. California's program is too aggressive too soon for the time frame that automakers need to design and launch our vehicles. The only cost-effective way to comply with California's program is to restrict the sale of specific vehicles, particularly those with lower fuel economy ratings like light trucks and SUVs, which Minnesota residents prefer to drive. Significant reductions in vehicle choice will disproportionately impact Minnesota because of your unique market. Minnesota residents favor light trucks and SUVs with a sales mix of approximately 55% light trucks and SUVs to 45% passenger cars. In comparison, California, the state that designed the program and retains control over the regulation, has a sales mix of about 50-50. It's actually a slight advantage to passenger cars at about 51%. A national standard allows manufacturers to balance Minnesota's fleets, which leans towards trucks, against other states like maybe Rhode Island or states in the Northeast that lean toward passenger cars. The California standards calls for each state to conform to California's designated fuel economy averages so that you would have to meet the averages set by California within the boundaries of Minnesota itself. And finally, Minnesota should not cede its regulatory authority to California. California's program is designed by California legislators and regulators, none of whom have any accountability to Minnesota or its residents. By adopting the California program, Minnesota is ceding its authority to a state that is vastly different and tying itself to all future regulatory changes. Our engineers have been handed a very challenging mandate to achieve the fuel economy standards that have been put before us in HR 6, and we just ask that the state of Minnesota let our engineers work toward those aggressive standards and give the program the opportunity to work. Essentially, by implementing California, you'd be putting in an individual state fuel economy program designed to meet the same goals as the federal program, but what we've just shown you here is that the federal program will actually provide better benefits. So with that, we just ask for your note. And can answer
so
any
every
questions.
Time the standards would change in California, we would be mandated to accept the new rules and standards there? If we, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any questions of Ms. Dooley at this time? Senator Carlson?
The auto manufacturers that you mentioned, are mm-hmm. they? What are they going to do? We have 12 states that have adopted it, and there are mm-hmm. more, several more that are planning to adopt it. What's their plan of action?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, if you're speaking specifically to the fuel economy portion, the prediction, and because we don't know for sure exactly how it will be implemented if and when it does, but if it is, the prediction of manufacturers is that they will restrict products in order to meet the standards that California has set, taking the lower fuel economy vehicles off the road.
Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, and Madam Guest, do you not agree with the air conditioning standards also, the air conditioning option?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, my understanding is part of the California program, it does regulate the leakage from air conditioning systems. Again, as I started my testimony, 1.89% of greenhouse gas emissions are attributable to the leakage in the air conditioning system. And that's an important point. While it is a contributor, 98% of the CO2, the greenhouse gas evaporatives, come from the burning of the fuel.
They say 12 states are looking at this.
About 1.89%, and these are CARB numbers, are attributable to the leakage from the air conditioning systems.
And Mr. Chair,
Mr. Carlson,
are you speaking of by weight, or are you speaking of by pollutant? Because the chlorofluoros in air conditioning are, I think it's something like it's a huge factor, more significant than are the CO2.
Yep, these are. Sorry, Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson. My understanding is that is taken into account is the potency of those HFC 134A, I think, is the refrigerant that's used mm-hmm. in all existing
134.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Where are the our neighboring states? Are they one of the 12 or any of the 12 that have adopted?
Mr. Chair, currently there are no Midwestern states that have adopted the California program. Illinois, your state to the south, is considering at this time. It's going through the legislature as well. But currently, and this is important, the only states that have adopted the California program to this time are on the border, most being in the northeast of the United States, the three western states as well, New Mexico being the exception. That's the first mountain state to go down this path. None of those states have a significant commitment to ethanol the way that Minnesota has. And I think it's fair to say that the reason no Midwestern state has gone down the path so far is because of the concerns regarding ethanol and E85 infrastructure.
Okay, Senator Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dooley, with regard to the states that are trying to get the waiver supporting California's effort, who is absorbing the costs of the litigation? Are those particular states paying for that? Is there a coalition doing that? Is California taking the lead on that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bonhoff, that's a great question, and I don't know the answer to it. I believe it's the individual states, but I could be wrong.
Okay, try to find that out and maybe let Senator Bonhoff know that. Okay, let's try to
move along.
Chairman, members.
Thank you. Kevin Papp, is it? President of Minnesota Farm Bureau. Welcome to the Minnesota Senate, and we've got about three, four more folks we'd like to hear from, if possible, but if not, it's all right, too.
Chairman Metzen, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Papp. My wife, Julie, and I own and operate a fourth-generation family farm in Blue Earth County, where we raise corn, soybeans, and boys. I'm president of the Minnesota Farm Bureau Federation, a general farm organization comprised of 78 local farm bureau associations with nearly 30,000 members. In agriculture, there are two words that affect most everything we do, certainty and uncertainty. Farmers need certainty to operate, certainty with farm programs, certainty with local, state, and national regulations, certainty with having adequate seed to plant our crops, feed for our animals, certainty that we'll have a transportation infrastructure to get our products to consumers, and certainty we'll have a market to sell our products to. We also have a lot of uncertainty. Uncertainty in our markets, uncertainty in availability of fuel, seed, fertilizer, and above all, uncertainty with Mother Nature. Those same two words, certainty and uncertainty, apply when looking at this legislation before us. Those who support this legislation have made it very clear they believe this legislation will be beneficial to Minnesota's ethanol industry. Those who oppose this legislation have also made it very clear they believe this legislation will be detrimental or even the end to our ethanol industry. It seems to be too much uncertainty. There are many people throughout this state, many who are in this room today, who have worked long and hard to get our E85 infrastructure to where it is today. We need certainty that E85 infrastructure will not only survive, but will have the opportunity to thrive in our state. Under California standards, in order for manufacturers to get credit for the sale of flex fuel vehicles, they have to provide proof that the E85 vehicle is using E85 fuel. Proponents have said that this can be accomplished through a survey or more effectively through the use of onboard technology. However, it has been noted there are a number of factors connected to the collection of this data through onboard diagnostics, which could provide disincentives for manufacturers to sell flex fuel vehicles, including the cost of the onboarding diagnostics, a cost which could be passed on to consumers, the availability of technology to collect the data needed, possible privacy issues, and the time lapse in reporting. Any disincentives for manufacturers to sell flex fuel vehicles leaves us with the uncertainty as to whether or not they will continue to sell those vehicles in our state. If Minnesota auto dealers quit selling flex fuel vehicles, our E85 infrastructure will crumble beneath itself. There is uncertainty with the implementation of the super ultra-low emission vehicle standards because today's flex fuel vehicles are not certified under this standard, as it's been mentioned. The proponents have noted that by the time these standards are fully implemented, flex fuel vehicle technology will have advanced and those vehicles will be certified. But can they guarantee that with any certainty? If not, we again are left with a high level of uncertainty whether or not our ethanol industry will be negatively affected by this standard. It has been clearly established that by adopting these California standards, Minnesota will be tying ourselves to any change the California Air Resources Board makes to their emission standards. By tying Minnesota to California, we are giving them the power to make decisions for us that could negatively impact our E85 infrastructure. There seems to be too many uncertainties. I want to be perfectly clear, Minnesota Farm Bureau's opposition to this bill does not mean Minnesota farmers are against clean air. Farmers have a vital stake and are committed to respecting and protecting our natural resources, both for ourselves and future generations, while remaining a leader in providing food, fiber, and fuel. Farmers are business owners. Like any business owner, when we are faced with making a major decision that affects our farms, we will do everything we can to make sure there is as much certainty as possible so the decisions we make will have a positive outcome for our farms and our families. With the level of uncertainty the California standards could have on our ethanol industry, I urge you to vote against this legislation before you. Thank you for the opportunity to appear today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, any further questions? Any questions of Mr. Papp from the Farm Bureau? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Papp.
Papp.
He's my constituent and a friend. Mr. Papp, do you know how many E85 fuel stations there are right now?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, in the state of Minnesota, I do not know that off the top of my head, but I will do know, as driving an E85, and I could get that information to the committee, driving an E85 vehicle, which I have for the last 2.5 years, there has never been a time in my travels around the state to where we have 326. Thank you. But more importantly, there has never been a time traveling around the state of Minnesota where I haven't been able to use E85 in my flex fuel vehicle. The only non-flex E85 fuel I've burnt is when I've been out of state with my particular flex fuel vehicle. So, as I drove up here today from south of Lake Crystal, 4 or 5 years ago, I probably would have went by one or two E85 stations, and I think this morning, I, along with the Lake Crystal Welcome Memorial FFA kids, probably went by about 12 or 13 E85. So we are very fortunate. The other concern I have, as we tie this to California, my good friend and president of the California Farm Bureau also has an E85 vehicle, flex fuel vehicle. His problem is in the three pumps, I believe he told me, three or four in the state of California, he's 100 miles away from his closest flex fuel. So there's a lot of difference between where we are in the E85 infrastructure in Minnesota and where California is. And we have, in Minnesota Farm Bureau, have some real problems tying our E85 to what California is or isn't doing.
Senator Rosen, follow.
I do believe we mandated last year, Mr. Papp, to put in 600 E85 ethanol plant or gas stations. And I'm not sure by what year, but I believe there's, I think we have, if we meet that 600 stations, we'll have half of the E85 stations in the nation. Because right now, I believe, or as of the end of session last year, there was a little over 1,200. So I could be wrong on that, but I believe.
Mr. Papp.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, and exactly what I said in my testimony. There's a lot of people in this room that worked very long and hard to have an E85, to have a value-added fuel system infrastructure in Minnesota, and that's something we don't want to see go by the wayside and crumble if we can't use the product that I can grow on my farm.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Papp, hello. I'm not sure that you're the person to ask. I apologize. I came in late. But I know someone who does not have a flex fuel vehicle but uses about half a tank of E85 and half a tank of regular gasoline. Is that something, he's been driving this car for years.
Still runs,
it works
huh?
fine. And still, yeah. He's one of our colleagues. And I just wondered if there's a market there for that. I mean, I've been tempted to do it because it's less expensive and just a matter of taking the time to do it, I guess. But is that something that you're familiar with?
Do you know that you can do that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Scheid, that is something that I do know that happens. I know in our vehicles on our farm that run on gasoline, certainly in Minnesota, everything is E10, and hopefully as we move to E20, there are some of that. I think that's a decision every farmer, every consumer needs to make and check out with their warranty. But as we see in other states, as we see around in the Midwest with blender pumps and things like that, we as farmers, I raise corn and soybeans, and I would like to add value to that crop, and I would rather get my fuel from the Midwest than the Mideast, quite honestly.
Yeah. Thank you.
Good. Further questions of Mr. Papp at this time? Okay, we'll hear from Alicia Philander, Minnesota Auto Dealers, and Rick Ryan, Machinists Union. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Alyssa Shalander. I'm with the Minnesota Auto Dealers Association. Mr. Chair, the members of my association are the Minnesota businesses who are caught in the middle of this debate between the automakers on one hand and the environmentalists on the other hand, who want you to force the automakers to make a different product. We are in a unique position here as we are caught in the middle, and we are in the position that we can't pick up our franchised businesses and move elsewhere. But most importantly, we're franchisees. And as franchisees, we cannot get product from anywhere else other than our franchisor. So what I mean by that is when Ford Motor Company is telling us that this bill will require them to restrict the supply of product to our dealerships don't have any other choice. I mean, if you're a Ford dealer selling Ford F-150s, you can only get Ford F-150s from Ford Motor Company. There's no other alternative to go find some other auto manufacturer that can supply that product to us. As it was already explained by the manufacturers, you know, the only way they can meet these California standards is to restrict product supply. We know that there are vehicles currently manufactured that can meet the standard. There are vehicles that exist that meet the standards. The rub comes from the way these standards are administered. They're administered on a fleet-wide average. So what that means is that although there are vehicles, you know, that can be sold under these standards, these standards would restrict how many we could sell. And that, to us, is very concerning to have supply restricted, especially now in the current economy where, you know, vehicle sales aren't exactly the greatest. So as it was already explained, you know, there are no flex fuel vehicles can meet certain aspects of California's standard. The super ultra low emissions vehicle standard cannot be met by any flex fuel vehicle. And in addition to that, the fact that vehicle manufacturers cannot get credit for selling flex fuel vehicles unless they can prove that the customer manufacturer sells a vehicle to us and then we sell it to the customer, and somehow the manufacturer is supposed to prove to the state that the customer is using nothing but E85 in the vehicle that they manufactured, is a pretty difficult way for them to get credit for putting those vehicles in the market. So we're concerned about this. Already there are manufacturers that are holding back certain vehicles from California states. We're not making this up. Minnesota, Senator Rosen, you mentioned how many E85 fueling stations Minnesota has. Minnesota has the most E85 fueling stations than any other state in the country. In addition to that, Minnesota has the second most number of flex fuel vehicles as a percentage of the fleet. We're doing very well in promoting ethanol as a viable alternative fuel. This bill actually makes us go the opposite direction. California and California states have the fewest number of flex fuel vehicle sales as a percentage of their fleet. If we're, you know, interested in continuing to support our ethanol industry, this bill is not the way to do that. Some of the models that are not for sale in California states, the Jeep Grand Cherokee, the Jeep Commander, Chrysler Aspen, Dodge Durango, Dodge Ram, Dodge Dakota, Lincoln Town Car, Chrysler Sebring, those are all not available in flex fuel motors in California states. The manufacturer simply does not offer them. That is very concerning to our dealers when we cannot meet customer demand, when we have many customers throughout the state of Minnesota who are interested in purchasing a vehicle that can run on flex fuel motors. So that's enough about the way this bill restricts our ability to get products from manufacturers. The bill also restricts our ability to share supply, to share product with other dealerships. And many smaller dealerships rely on what they call dealer trades. So, a customer comes into a small dealership and the customer isn't able to see the vehicle they want with the options they want in their vehicle on the dealer's lot. Well, that dealer can trade one of the vehicles he has on his lot for a the vehicle that meets the customer's demand in some other dealership. Dealers do this every day, and they do it on a regional basis, not just within the boundaries of Minnesota. So, you know, we can go and get a vehicle from Milwaukee or Chicago or wherever to meet the customer's demand. Under this bill, we would not be able to do that because under this bill, the only vehicles that would be legal to register in Minnesota would be those that are stamped California certified. None of our other surrounding states have California certified vehicles on their lots. So we couldn't bring in vehicles from other states to meet customer demand. Customers couldn't go to other states to buy the vehicle they want because they couldn't register them here. I guess they could go buy them in Wisconsin and register them in Wisconsin, but I don't think that's the kind of policy we want to put forward. So, you know, Mr. Chair, I won't belabor the point. I know we're trying to get out of here, and I want Mr. Ryan to have time to testify. And it has already been mentioned, the fact that we are just, you know, setting us up to follow in lockstep with, you know, California bureaucrats with no input from the state of Minnesota. That also is a big concern with respect to this bill. So anyway, Mr. Chair, I'll just end by saying this bill has a lot of costs and consequences to our industry, to the economy of Minnesota, and we really don't get any benefit from doing this.
Is there any estimate, maybe there's not, what the cost of a vehicle would it increase? I would imagine it would.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, the estimate is the increase in having to be a California certified vehicle is between $1,000 and $3,000.
Okay, Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, and to that point, Ms. Schlender, is that for the technology to document how much flex fuel they've used? And because it sounds just very expensive to me, all this diagnostic, onboard diagnostic, and I'm not sure if they've even come up with a figure for how much all this is going to cost and if it's even going to work. So perhaps there was some testimony before I got here this morning on that very issue, but I can't quite figure out how they're going to get an accurate figure on how much fuel is being used in that car.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rosen, you're exactly right. There is no way to get an accurate measure of how much E85 fuel is being used in a flex fuel vehicle. They have talked about doing a survey of customers. That's obviously unreliable. Mentioning relying on OnStar, but that's obviously very expensive. Again, that's an additional monthly service that people would have to pay for in order, and not to mention that there's no technology that exists that can measure the kind of gas in the gas tank to be able to tell anybody. I mean, you're relying on customers to have to, you know, report on, you know, keep records and save receipts, and that's a pretty inefficient way to measure the use of E85 fuel.
Senator Carlson.
Schlender, I guess I'm wondering if this is a red herring here that you're talking about. The motor controller in any vehicle can tell what fuel it's burning. Absolutely it can, because if you're dealing with E85, there's a lot of adjustments in the automobile that are being made as you're driving it, just like any other vehicle. Your engine management system is adjusting it. It adjusts it every day. It adjusts it constantly. So you can, in fact, probably very easily program it and log it. But now I don't know if that's important. I really don't know if that's important.
Because Mr. Machinist, did you – you nodded like well, you had an answer to that.
Mr. President, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Richard Ryan. I'm business representative for District 77 of the Machinist Union. I represent franchise auto dealer employees in the St. Paul suburban area, approximately 700 members, mechanics, oil change people, parts personnel. Our concern about this job or this bill relates to jobs. We're concerned because we're in a very depressed state in the automotive industry right now. We've had a number of layoffs. We've had a number of dealerships close, dealerships merging. We're losing members. We're losing franchise dealers. People don't give up franchise dealers that they have millions of dollars invested in because they want to. And we're concerned that if this bill passes,
We're going to put an additional burden on the people who employ my members and who I worked at for 20-some years that are going to make it impossible for them to compete and to remain profitable so that my members can have jobs. Regarding the technology, I'm not aware of any technology at this time that allows them to measure that the fuel is actually E85. They can tell the octane level of fuel by whether the car starts to detonate, so they can tell that it's a lower octane fuel. But I'm not aware of technology that would actually say that this is E85 or just lower octane fuel or lower fuel value fuel. So it could be a number of things that, it does constantly adjust. There's a lot of things that the computer systems can do, but we didn't have any way in the information that I had worked at a Honda dealership. We had no way of telling what the fuel was in the tank until we actually took a sample of it and figured it out manually, because we had problems with cars that people would put E85 in their Honda and it wouldn't run, or it ran very poorly because it wasn't designed to run on that kind of fuel.
Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things I'm having a hard time wrestling with is the inconsistency between how this started out with the first testimony saying that the federal government is actually proposing standards that are going to exceed what the California standards now have, and yet, Ms. Schulander, when you talked about it, saying that if we went with the California standards, it would put all this tremendous pressure on the auto industry, but in fact, we've heard prior to your speaking that the federal government is going to insist that we go this direction anyway. So can you address that inconsistency?
Alicia.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair and Senator Boniff, I'm sorry. I should have been more clear. We support a federal approach to improving vehicle emissions. That is absolutely correct. Under the federal approach, it is easier for manufacturers to achieve very aggressive standards that were laid out by the federal government because they do it on a nationwide basis. So you've got one region where you're selling a lot more, bigger vehicles, trucks, what have you, and, say in California we're selling a lot more Priuses. Well, that's a bad example because California wouldn't be bought. But you've got one region selling a lot of trucks, one region selling a lot of smaller cars. That all averages out to meet the fleet-wide average on a nationwide basis. However, under California's system, you have to meet these averages and standards within the boundaries of each particular state. So that's why within each particular state, you have to meet the standards. You have to sell so many that meet the super ultra-low emissions vehicle standard. You have to meet so many that sell the ultra-low emissions vehicle standard. And that's why we're talking about product restrictions in order to put the number of vehicles that you have to sell into those particular categories. On a federal level, there's just a lot more product that can be moved around. And the federal rules also are more flexible, and they do incentivize flex fuel vehicles. They do allow more flexibility for manufacturers to use different technologies to meet the averages. So that's why the federal situation, we get, the same results and sometimes slightly better results with the federal rules without the sacrifices that we would need to have under the California system.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Latz and Senator Day after that. Thank Senator you. Latz.
Mr. Chairman, this is perhaps just a process question. I wasn't here at the beginning of the meeting. Obviously, we're hearing only from the opponents today. It's a little bit awkward, I guess. Not even the author of the bill is here. Knowing the proponents, I know they had wanted to bring some expert witnesses in from California to testify.
Let me.
And can you get some idea of what the plan is with regard to this?
I explained this earlier. Senator Marty called late Friday, and I heard about it Sunday yesterday that he couldn't get his witness in here, but we had notified so many people, and I promised him on the phone this morning we won't take a vote, and then when he gets his people in, we'll hear that side of it. But I thought it was just a little too late at 9:45 this morning to cancel a committee meeting, so we are going to hear from the opponents. And I told Senator Marty and the House author that the minute it moved to the House floor, I told him 2-3 weeks ago that we would hear the bill here. Why go through all of the efforts? And they agreed to that. So as soon as it moved out of the House, or out of the committees to the House floor, I scheduled this meeting just last Wednesday, what I promised the author I would do. So I'm fulfilling, you know, my obligation, at least personally, that I made to Senator Marty. And then, of course, when I hear Sunday night and early this morning, that so we wanted to go through this part of it, that there will be no votes today. So we will hear from the other side. So that's the explanation that, right or wrong, I figured we should still go through with this part of it. And Senator Marty seemed to understand it this morning when I talked to him. But for him to call it off after they'd kind of said, please do it, which I'm doing, you know, because he couldn't get somebody in from California. So that's why we're here today. But we won't vote today.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to belabor the point, but was it last Wednesday that it went to the House floor? I mean,
yeah, I think so, yeah.
5 days is a little short notice to bring someone in from California.
Well, in this business, I mean, you've been around here. I mean, it's you all got to be kind of flexible, and we don't know what we're doing tomorrow morning. So if you get 5 days notice, that's a lot for this body, I think. But, you know, and they got to be, you know, I'm sure everybody's busy, but sometimes we'll be doing something tomorrow that we don't even know about today, so. Senator Dade.
Well, first off, Mr. Chairman, you've been overly fair, and you've done a good job running our committee. And as you well know, we scuttled this bill once before, and it's been kicking around now for about the last 6-8 weeks. Personally, I think it's a bad bill for Minnesota at this time, you know, maybe 2-3 years from now. But you know, California, I think I told Senator Carlson that I don't want Schwarzenegger to pick my car for me the next time I buy a car. I'd rather just, you know, kind of pick my own car, and if I have to pick one that government decides, then I'll go with Klobuchar and Coleman. But, you know, 70% of the cars are cars in California, where, you know, we have a lot of pickup trucks and agriculture that we just listened to. So, you know, there are certain bills. We're a week from the end of session, and there are certain bills that could have been done 2-3 months ago if somebody would have wanted to, and they surely could have been here today if I would have had a bill and I was in the minority. You can, and I trust me, this has got nothing to do with our chairman, and I am in the minority in the 18 years I've been here, and if you didn't have your people at a hearing that you asked for, forget it. I mean, you wouldn't see the light of day that day after. So I wish he was here. I would love to vote on this bill today, and I hope that our committee does get a chance to vote on it. I hope that it doesn't one of these midnight bills that show up on the Senate floor and never really passed any committee.
Senator Saltzman Scheid, then we're going to adjourn, and we're going to notify Marty again, Senator Marty, that he's up as soon as possible. And I don't mean to be, but again, 5 or 6 days in this business is seems like a lifetime to me. So if you're ready with the bill, you should be ready, but Senator Saltzman.
Yes, and on all those points, Mr. Chair, I think that our time is limited because we're trying to juggle a lot of different schedules. So even giving this much time to the opponents, I think, is worthwhile, and then to be able to have time to think about the discussion and come back and hear the other side and be able to ask questions. So, Mr. Chair, I thank you for, you know, trying to fit these meetings in when there's so many. I know we had other meetings today as well at this time in education, so I think we're all trying to juggle and do the best we can. So I really appreciate everyone being here today for at least as part of the discussion.
Senator Marty will get his time here, and we're working on that as best we can. Senator Scheid, Carlson, then we're going to adjourn.
Chairman,
and we'll.
I just wanted, it's kind of a response to Senator Day. I'm not sure that I want, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger to choose my car, but I'd argue right now that the oil companies are having a lot to do with choosing our cars. And I don't like that either. And I think that, you know, it's time for Detroit and wherever else we make cars in America to go with what California's done. For crying out loud, why didn't they move there? I mean, why didn't the manufacturers take a clue from what has been, you know, working and improving conditions in California and understand that that was going to happen across the country? So I think that the auto manufacturers in this country have been long affected by smaller cars, more fuel-efficient cars. They have not taken a clue. I mean, I just cannot believe that what I think is just gross ignorance on the part of the auto manufacturers. And so, you know, I think we ought to move this way, because, and I think the auto dealer, not the auto dealers, they're stuck with what is manufactured. I understand that. But I think our dealers are hurting as much by Detroit's recalcitrance in terms of environmental issues and economic issues than anything. So I just wanted to say that and give a speech before session.
Mr. Chairman, one real quick answer to that. First off, no oil company has ever picked my vehicle. If they did, I probably wouldn't be driving one that gets only 18 miles a gallon. But also, California, they have 7 out of the 10 largest smog-polluted cities in the United States, maybe in the world. So it isn't like California is setting the world on fire on environment.
So, Carlson, then we're going to adjourn, and we're going to
quick answer, Mr.
Get the
Chair,
proponents in here.
To Senator Day, I don't want Arnie Schwarzenegger to pick my vehicles either, because I think he has a Humvee for every day of the week. But there is other states that are looking at this, and contrary to what was said here, is there are some states, for instance Arizona, that have a similar mix of small trucks to automobiles that we have. So it's not like we are unique.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman,
Sir Day,
I don't
Day.
Think Arizona has a foot of snow on May 1st.
All right, we're going to hear. I'm very sorry we didn't get to the corn growers and Mr. Workman, and we'll get to you people the next meeting, okay? Meeting is adjourned.